Hello and welcome to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And it is an absolute delight to be here today. Little windy.
Starting to pick up,
right? Maybe a little wet later today. What do you say, Scott?
That is definitely going to happen.
Maybe a little wet later today. Oh, who are we kidding, Scott? It's actually a pre-recorded show, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I definitely would.
You know, I've thought long and hard about this. Do we put it out there? Do we not put it out there? But we really don't want our producer to have to constantly answer telephone calls and go, sorry, they're pre-recorded. She just threw her hands up, by the way. Or either just block them out and everybody goes, what, are they not taking phone calls? But I don't know. Unfortunate, fortunate, however you take it, folks. We're coming to you a few days early for the typical time slot of the Yard Pro Show, and we're delighted to do so because as we talk at this moment, what's the hot topic?
In the future or right now?
Right now.
Well, precipitation is going to be the biggest thing.
Precipitation is going to be the biggest thing. You know, I heard something earlier today.
What is that?
Since 7:30 a.m. landfall.
Mm-hmm.
And it is 12 hours later. Hurricane Florence has moved a whopping 36 miles. A whopping 36 miles in a 12-hour period. So,
needless to say, I guarantee the drought report will change next week.
Yes, we could actually talk about the drought report.
It's definitely going to change.
Now, because it's issued, it's actually released by the USDA on Tuesday is when they take the drought report, is released to the public on Thursday. As of Thursday, this week, 29.81% of the state of South Carolina in some form of drought. Now, that's actually down roughly 5%, but I have a feeling by the time we talk to our listeners and participants next week, Scott, we may see the drought report at a 0% of this state within drought. So unfortunate for those, and let's be somewhat, you know, I'm not going to say somewhat. Let's be sincere, Scott. Unfortunate. Yeah. You have family in the eastern coast of North Carolina, from the Outer Banks area. I think you told me earlier today you actually have one cousin or such that's on a police force out there who is actually staying because he's on call. But, you know, your heart goes out to those that are suffering such a long barrage of an event. I think at the current time you and I are actually doing this, it's now a tropical storm. It's forecasted to move up through the state of South Carolina, which will continue to bring tropical storm and tropical winds and tropical rainfall throughout South Carolina and North Carolina throughout the weekend. So hopefully everyone fares well. But at the same token, it also brings up some things that are beyond your control that also pertain to your landscape. So as we move throughout the show today, I think there are a few things that may be of importance. First and foremost, the things are changing. The seasons begin to change. We talked a little bit about this last week. Oh, and how about last week, by the way? Live remote.
It was.
A little play-by-play action. I'm happy to report every piece of the sod was installed green side up.
And all the pine needles used?
So the young man who was working on his Eagle Scout project, kudos to him because he was able to instruct all of his labor to install the sod green side up. So all the Royal Zoysia is installed. Actually looks really good this week. It has been hot. It has been humid. And has been rather dry up until Florence came knocking on the door. And it's, you know, throughout the state, truthfully. But, yes, the Royal Zoysia has done quite well, retains excellent color, and will get some much-needed rain through the weekend, right?
Definitely.
Hopefully not too much rain. But I know things were busy this week, people covering up bare soil throughout the state. You know, new construction, landscape renovations, just washed areas. I know I spent a little bit of time volunteering, installing 300-foot of silt fence. We'll see how that holds up, with the hopes that we can mitigate a little bit of possible erosion in the future. We'll see how that goes. But needless to say, it's going to be a wet weekend and a wet start to the week. And what does that bring? Other than the changes in temperature, changes in daylight hours, also a massive amount of rain, flooding rain. Now, when we're talking flooding rain, is it going to be the 18 to 20, the 30 to 40 inches that the coast has received? Anywhere you live within the listening area, you're probably going to have some amount of flooding within your lawn. Or may have already experienced it. Flooding doesn't have to be the entire neighborhood, doesn't have to be the entire lawn. It can be certain areas within the lawn or landscape that flood. And one of the things that I think is pertinent, worth talking about, is what do you do when you have a grassed or sodded area flooded? We've been through this as a farm. I mean, for Pete's sake, the mountain farm, the fescue farm, flooded twice within 14 days earlier this summer up on the Green River in North Carolina in Polk County. So, you know, what do you do when the lawn floods? You have what's your suggestion, Scott? I mean, I told you I'm going to put you on the spot and make you talk.
You just want to talk. And in what situation are you talking about?
If you have flooded turf in a lawn, what's your response? What do you do?
Dry it out as quick as possible.
Dry it out as quick as possible. You're right. So the quicker that the flood water will recede, now that's not always possible. Sometimes you can't. You don't have control over how it recedes and how quickly it recedes. Right. But sometimes you do. It could be as simple as after the rain event, taking a shovel, taking a hoe out. You know, I remember my yard when I grew up in Clinton, the backyard would flood a good bit. Reason being, fence. And as the water would try to move from the neighbor's yard above you to the neighbor's yard below you through the fence,
they would take thatch and
you would have thatch and sticks and leaves that would clog all the open parts of the fence. So you'd have to go out there and remove it so it'd run out. So the quicker that you can get the water removed from the turf, that you can get the waters to recede from the flood, the less likely you're going to have permanent damage. Now, some of our listeners, Scott, that's not going to be an option. They're probably going to have water on their lawns for 3, 4, 5 days. Depending on how deep the water is, how clean or dirty the water is, you know, we're also talking about coastal flooding, how much salt content's in it. If some of these grasses just don't tolerate salt well at all. Hybrid 419 is not going to tolerate salt as well as Palisade Zoysia. Oddly enough, Palisade Zoysia tolerates salt extremely well. Some varieties don't. If we can get the water, recede the floodwaters as quickly as possible. If you can't, once it recedes, maybe it's 3 days, maybe it's 4 days, maybe it's 5 days, don't throw the hat in. Be patient. Give the lawn 7 to 10 to 14 days to see what happens. Because most of these lawns, I feel like, that will be flooded are warm season lawns. We're talking about coastal flooding, flooding in the Midlands. Give the lawn time, sufficient time to dry out to see what it's still going to come back to life. All right, the other issue with flooding, silt. So, you know, what's the thoughts on silt and sand and things that may be piled up on the lawn? It's free top dressing, I guess.
To a point.
There you go, to a point.
Get a squeegee. I'm just kidding.
Seem weird.
Hose it out? I mean,
as that silt begins to dry, you know, it's going to get real crusty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those fines, those particles of what kind of float in the water. As floodwaters recede, that's the last thing on the surface of the water. Therefore, it's the top thing on these silted or sanded areas. It's going to get crusty. We got to make sure as it dries, you need to go out there with a rake and remove it. You know, it sounds crazy. I've seen floods on golf courses. I remember as a high school student working on a golf course. Ennery River came out of its banks. Yeah, there's a couple things you can do.
Backpack blowers?
When things dry out, you can take backpack blowers and blow it off. I know this sounds crazy. You could take pressurized water and use that to blow silt off the surface. right? Mm-hmm. Now you're adding more water back, but just don't add it to the point you flood. Believe it or not, in this one instance, rotary sweeper brooms like you see on the highway department, sweeping the asphalt after they pave. Anything mechanically that you can do to remove the silt, to remove what the debris that's left behind after the floodwaters recede, you're far better off. And the quicker you can do this, you're far better off. You know, when we talk about top dressing warm season lawns, we're only suggesting, what, a quarter inch, no more than a half an inch, depending on height of cut, and we want that sand worked into the crown of the plant. Well, the water's going to work everything into the crown of the plant, but then it's going to be packed above that and covering your leaf blades. We've got to see leaf blades through the sand, through the silt. The plant has to be able to see sunlight, have photosynthesis, and have a shot at living. So with flooded turf, to recap it, Scott, what we need, first and foremost, we need to recede the water as quickly as possible. Give the grass a long time to regenerate itself, to see what we have before you pass judgment. We'd say that for any issue within a lawn, right? We'd say it for winter kill.
Yeah.
And
plants are tough.
They're resilient. Grasses are tough. They're resilient, especially if they're healthy, established lawns. They're tough. They're resilient. Are you going to have some damage? I'm sure you are.
Oh, yeah.
Is it necessary? It's probably not to the point where the entire lawn has to come out. Or total death of the lawn. Be patient. And if you have any silt, any debris, anything like that, the quicker you can get that off, the better off you are.
What about issues going from now, depending on how much rainfall we get, and silt and all that other stuff built up on top, before dormancy, injury between now and dormancy?
That's a little concern I would have. I mean, it's almost like, you know, another topic that today I want to get into, which is fall armyworms. Anytime we have injury going into that transitional time of year, which we're not in transition yet, I don't even wouldn't even like to say we're close, but we are headed to the transition time of the year. Days are shorter, sunlight angle's a little bit different. It's getting lower, if you've noticed that, every day. And soil temperatures are going to begin to drop before we realize it, correct?
Oh, yes.
So we need to be really concerned about that. So if you do have some damage like that to your lawn, I think you bring up a very valid point, Scott, is we need to get these lawns grown back healthy as we possibly can prior to winter dormancy. The other issue I have with floods, and we see this at the mountain farm, it floods a good bit, weeds. You know, I hate to say that. Now, I've got listeners thinking about fescue going, well, that's all my where all my weeds came from. No, not necessarily. But after a flood, we find that we have to do more due diligence for weed control, and really not necessarily controlling it, but looking for weed control. Because a lot of times, where do these floods come from? They come from rivers. What grows on the edge of the river?
A lot of it, nuts edge is one.
Yeah.
Sedges?
Sedges.
Yep.
It's kind of like the reed family, you know? You hear about reeds and things that the Native Americans make baskets out of. That's where they grow. That's their native habitat. So now we have all these sedges that potentially can contaminate your lawn. So we need to be on the lookout for that. The other thing that I am a little bit concerned about, but looking at it kind of goes into soil temperatures and a topic we could really get into, and I don't know if maybe we should begin to get into it now, beyond the flooding that's taking place now across the state of South Carolina, across North Carolina, you know, some of the seasonal changes things we see that's really big on warm season grasses that we really have to be concerned about is large patch. As the temperature begins to cool, large patch becomes a big issue. Now that we're having excessive moisture, it really becomes an even a bigger issue, a very serious disease in warm season lawns. Now, it's very similar to the Rhizoctonia, the brown patch disease out there. Both of them are in the family of Rhizoctonia. You know, we talk some technical stuff here. It's a nice family. They do some great things to lawns, right? You bring up a valid point, Scott. Any of our listeners, if you hear rhizoctonia, just run, right? Not a nice thing to have on any species lawn. All species of warm season grasses are susceptible to large patch, which is a species of rhizoctonia from the genus rhizoctonia. Okay. All species of warm season lawns are susceptible. Now, some are more susceptible to others. Some are easier to keep healthier going through fall. Therefore, we don't see as much disease impact. Some grow faster and can sometimes not necessarily outgrow the disease. But if you are infected, it doesn't seem to linger as long or be as bad because that variety grows faster, i.e. Bermuda. Mm-hmm. However, Bermuda is susceptible to rhizoctonia. However, it doesn't seem to become as big as a problem, nor does it seem to last or persist as long as it would on a slower-growing turf, such as Zoysia, such as St. Augustine. I know some people are going, well, you're crazy. St. Augustine grows fast.
It does.
Centipede grows fast. It does, but when does it grow fast? Not till when?
July,
exactly. When it gets really hot, right?
Hot.
It has to get extremely hot. So you're faced, if you're infected with this disease, which the inoculation period, the number one inoculation period, it can happen in the spring, but the majority of the inoculation happens in the fall of the year. So if the plant is inoculated in the fall and you have damage by spring, now we're looking at
2 months,
brown, dead, sunken grass areas within your lawn from spring of the year, which for some of our listeners, like in coastal South Carolina, that's from what? March, April, May, June, 4 months minimum before the grass really begins to grow aggressively and regrow. Whereas something like Bermuda seems to grow a little bit more aggressive earlier in the year, earlier in the spring. You can manipulate it more. So, you know, what are the symptoms of large patch? How would you describe it?
In the springtime?
In the spring or in the fall. I've seen it active in the fall. You know, you can see it. You can find it in the fall. I think it's a little early now. But it might be a good opportunity to go through this systematically.
Yeah. Fall, because I would like... Yeah.
What are we looking for in the fall? How do we know if the yard...
Lesions?
...has an issue? So some lesions on leaves. But you will see irregular-shaped areas in the lawn with kind of a yellowish halo from the infected area versus non-infected grass. Rather large. Some can be as large as a hood of a pickup truck. If you look around, you'll see this in the fall of the year when it gets a little cooler. No doubt about it. You will see this. What do we see by spring of the year?
Dead areas.
What's that?
Dead areas.
Dead areas. Areas that don't green up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's plain and simple.
Would you say centipede is the number one?
I think it's hard to judge. I think it is. It's just my opinion. Across the entire Southeast. Good question. But I think across the entire Southeast, the most affected lawns that we're familiar with in our area is probably centipede. I think for a number of years, just my professional opinion is, I think a number of years, a lot of things that we don't hear about anymore, like centipede decline, mm-hmm. like, hey, once the grass reaches 6, 7, 8 years of age, it just begins to decline and we can't figure out why. I think what a lot of researchers have found is actually large patch being inoculated in the fall of the year. By spring of the year, it just doesn't green up. So I think this has been going on for a long time, and you're beginning to see it kind of creep up. To me, it seems that it started in the Gulf Coast states. They were some of the first to the scientists, researchers down there to really say, hey, this is probably more disease, symptoms of disease than it is just the grass getting old and declining. And they started to look more into this. So, yes, I think centipede's probably number one. I think it used to be St. Augustine, I'd say, is number two, but I think St. Augustine is such a small percentage of St. Augustine has grown. And, you know, not only in South Carolina, but in a lot of states, other than Florida. Yeah, it seems to be the preferred grass in Florida. But you go to Louisiana, you go to Alabama, those states have some of the same issues that we have with growing St. Augustine. It grows great in about half the state, but then you get so far north, the cold tolerance becomes an issue. Mm-hmm. So you don't see as much. But zoysia, there's more and more zoysia planted every year. And zoysias, a lot of zoysia varieties, all zoysia varieties are susceptible. But it seems that some of the wider blade zoysias are more susceptible. Some varieties are a little more susceptible than others. No one has really developed and bred a
fireproof one.
Yeah, the bulletproof, you know, nothing's going to affect this zoysia. Now, some things are getting better on that front, and there's some researchers. You know, we last week talked a little bit about two new varieties, Tamstar Chisholm being released, Tamstar being a St. Augustine. It has great resistance to chinch bugs, by the way, Chisholm. But talking with Dr. Ambika Chandra from Texas A&M, one of the things I believe she's beginning to look at, now that they have bred for some insect resistance, they have bred and been successful for increased cold tolerance, you know, improved cold tolerance in grasses. I think the next thing, because every year I go out there, I talk with her, and I'm like, when are you going to get me one that's resistant to large patch? You following? So I think that's something down the road you may see. But at this point, there's really nothing out there. You know, it would be like someone who develops a fescue seed to make the bold claim that, oh, we have resistance to brown patch. Now, it might have marginal amount of resistance, a better resistance to brown patch, but not enough that I think you could go out there and market it as being resistant. So I think you may begin to see that. So, in the fall of the year, if you have a warm season lawn, which is infected with large patch, it's going to be somewhat similar to a degree of what you would see on a cool season lawn, where that margin of infected grass versus non-infected grass, you're going to see a little bit of a halo, kind of a yellowish color to it from a distance. And then you may see some green grass in the center of that infected area. Spring of the year, you're going to see just big areas, irregular shaped areas, because we don't want our Bermuda customers to get confused with spring dead spot, which is more the size of a basketball and almost a perfect circle. So, you know, understanding the symptoms is a big thing.
Here's one. A Bermuda lawn that's really bad with dollar spot before it goes dormant.
That could pose some problems because you have a weakened turf. And if we have a cold winter like we did last year, I say that with a little reservation. I mean, last year's winter was cold. I don't know if it was really as cold as some of the weather media would like to sensationalize, just like other things they sensationalize on the weather. I don't know if it was that much colder, but I think what it was a moisture issue. We were cold early with no moisture. We were in drought. Then we were still – we got warm. Then we got cold again with excessive moisture. So now we got this freeze-thaw thing going on. But a turf that is weakened, that is under stress, is certainly not going to come through that winter near as good.
Right.
You know that, right? Yep. So Scott, we're getting down to that bottom of the hour break here in a second. When we come back, we got to put a little candy out there, right, for all of our listeners today.
A bunch of goodies over there.
When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more. I want to talk a little bit more about large patch, because I think it's that important. We also want to talk a little bit about our cool season friends who are quickly approaching reseeding time of the year. And there's probably a couple other little goodies we need to talk about. But before we go to that bottom of the hour break, I'd like to remind all the listeners that you are tuned in to the Yard Pros Show today, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. If you'd like to find a location nearest to you or you have any questions, it's very simple. You can Google us at you can actually go www.carolinafreshfarms.com. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And Scott, tell you what.
Tell us.
It was an interesting first half.
It was.
Hope it. I hope there was a lot of information, a lot of things learned, a lot of things going on. We were in a discussion about large patch. If you have a warm season lawn, let's go back to what we said. No matter what variety of warm season lawn you have, if you have a warm season lawn, you need to continue to listen, wouldn't you say?
I would.
Before they continue to listen, I do want to say this, because we probably don't say it enough. This is brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. We're simple. We're easy to find. You can go to online, www.carolinafreshfarms.com. There you will find a link to one of our six retail stores throughout the state of South Carolina. There's a lot of good information on there as well. A lot of black and white, helping you choose the proper sod for your lawn. Talking about the hardscape and mulch products that we sell at the stores, to the chemicals and fertilizers. There's some information there. There's a link to the Clemson Home and Garden Information Center, part of Clemson Extension, that has some great bulletins there on issues you may have within your lawn and landscape. So I invite you during the week, if you have a question for any of our staff, knowledgeable staff at Carolina Fresh, it's simple. Visit www.carolinafreshfarms.com. Find the store nearest you. Click on that link. There you will find the store hours, directions on how to get there. Most importantly, you will find an email address for that particular store. Take a picture of the problem. Take a picture of your success, or take a picture of your failure within your landscape. Email it to someone like Scott, because you're the store manager in the Anderson location. We probably don't say that enough. You've been on the air now with myself for, what, how many years now?
Was it 4 or 5 years?
It's been a while. I can't remember. Right? I can't remember. That's an easy one. I need to remember that. I'll start using that. Maybe I can remember that. But it's been a number of years. I think this actually may be the fourth season, maybe going into fifth, not real sure. But, you know, if a listener wants to find someone like you at one of our stores, to me it's simple. That's the point. www.carolinafreshfarms.com. All right. I said it, Scott. Let's get back to large patch. So, first half, we talked a little bit about the symptoms and all that good stuff. Now let's get down to nitty-gritty. Here's what we need to know about large patch. This is straight. I tell you how wonderful the HGIC, the Home and Garden Information Center from Clemson University. This is straight. I will read it straight off of their technical bulletin for brown patch and large patch diseases of lawns, updated November 13th, 2017. So in our world, pretty recent publication.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Their disease can develop rapidly when daytime temperatures are warm, 75 to 90 degrees Fahrenheit, and humid. Nighttime temperatures are above 60 degrees Fahrenheit. And there is an extended period of leaf wetness, i.e., Hurricane Florence. Right? Nighttimes are definitely above 60. Daytimes are 75 to 90. I've always said when it feels like football, when you get up one morning, we've had a little bit cooler evening. Because then I switch over to University of Arkansas, Division of Agriculture. They have some information. I know it's Arkansas. It's not South Carolina. But large patch is the same disease in Arkansas as it is in South Carolina. Same disease. Some of their research, and I'll make a note of this. Infection and disease development probably starts from mid-September to early October in Arkansas, depending on location, and continues for as long as the temperatures are consistently above 50 degrees Fahrenheit and conditions are moist. All right? There's two things, two different universities. Both of them are great when it comes to researching turf diseases. Both of them have a really good following. Both of them are great universities. Both of them have some common statements there. Moist. Prolonged leaf wetness, correct? And look at the temperature range. It will continue until it gets below the mid-50s, the infection or inoculation period. That's what they suspect. And HGIC says, hey, when it's warm during the day, 75 to 90. I think that 75 is the key because that feels like football weather, right? But and it's 60 degrees at night. So a little bit cooler at night, still kind of warm during the day. Prolonged leaf wetness, high humidity, we see the development of this disease. So what do?
Apply fungicide.
Apply a fungicide.
Now what about, would you suggest one application or two applications?
Ah, good point. Great scholarly question there. Look at you. All excited, right?
My job is done.
Your job is done. No, your job's not done. We still have 20-odd minutes of this left, right? So how many applications do you make?
We are September 14th.
Do you need to apply something now? Okay? Now's the time. So you can apply Headway, you can apply Pillar, you can apply Eagle. Here's the skinny. Those products, even though they're systemic, they get into the plant system, they're great products. Some of the best products out there. And it's just amazing to me that they're available to homeowners. Easy to use, extremely safe to use. Here's the issue, though. They're only good for 21 to 28 days, depending on the weather conditions. All right, let's go back to what HGIC of Clemson University says, to what University of Arkansas Department of Agriculture says. Those conditions that are favorable, what if we get what I always grew up, we always called it, you know, I remember my grandparents said, Indian summer. You know, where summer kind of runs into fall, and there is no fall, and we go straight to winter. It's kind of our typical weather pattern in South Carolina. So if we stay where we have favorable conditions, once that soil temperature or the nighttime temperatures consistently drop below the mid-50s, the soil temperature is going to plummet. We're kind of in the clear. The inoculation period, the disease is not as active. But that's going to be a while typically for us. So I think what happens, you apply now, you said we're September 14th, 15th, somewhere in that range. So 21 days from now is what, October 7th, somewhere in that range. We're still going to be in a favorable conditions. And what concerns me is we just came through a period where we have an active Atlantic tropical situation. Look to the Gulf Coast. I've always told folks, look to the Gulf Coast. The weather out of the Gulf Coast can have a huge impact. Years ago, when large patch really became a little more known and everybody started figuring out what was going on, we had multiple storms back to back to back in the month of September and October. Those 2 months, September and October, we had multiple storms that came through the Gulf Coast that came right up through the state of South Carolina. We had excessive tropical moisture. We had warm temperatures. We had a little bit cooler evenings. We had favorable conditions for large patch spread and development. The problem is it's Rhizoctonia. Once you get it in your lawn, it's a soil-borne pathogen. It has the potential to be there because this disease, if left untreated, inoculates the plant in the fall. When it gets really, really cold in the winter, it's probably not going to be active. The grass is dormant. You can't tell what it's doing. In the spring of the year, when we begin to warm and it gets 75, 80 degrees and the grass wants to green up, it doesn't because the disease, one, has already done damage from last year, and two, the disease can then continue to grow and spread. So you ask, you know, how many applications of fungicide? My opinion is two applications in the fall is better than put one down and say, well, if I got a problem, I'll do it again in the spring. Two applications in the fall, more than likely you're not going to need a spring applications. But if you only do one in the fall, I can guarantee you you're going to need at least one. And if we have a prolonged spring like we had this year, we kind of had a prolonged spring. We had a lot of customers this past spring coming in and bought some fungicide. And 21 days later, they're like, man, do you think yes, you probably need to apply it again because we're still in that springtime weather pattern. Cooler nighttime temps, warmer daytime temps, and we're getting excessive moisture. So you're going to have to apply as many applications. There's a timeline on how long those products are active. You're going to have to apply them as long as we're in that window of opportunity for inoculation. It's the same with any disease. It's the same with any pre-emergent. You know, we have you put pre-emergent out in February to get on the front end, but we have you come back in May. Reason being, we want to make sure you got enough to get you all the way through summer to keep all the crabgrass germination at bay or the goosegrass germination at bay, right?
Yes.
So we're in the same situation. Here's some interesting tidbits. Should we go through them? You want me to do that?
Oh, please.
This is from HGIC, Prevention and Treatment. For those who don't want to go to our website and find the link to HGIC, go to their website and type in their large patch. Avoid high rates of nitrogen fertilizer. This pertains more to brown patch on cool season grasses in the late spring and summer. Avoid high nitrogen rates on warm season grasses in mid to late fall. Hence, why we never suggest once we get past about the third week of August, We don't want you putting a whole lot of free nitrogen out on your warm season lawns, because Rhizoctonia, those diseases, those particular, that genus of diseases, they feed on free nitrogen in soil. You're just making the problem worse, okay? Irrigate grass only when needed to a depth of 4 to 6 inches, generally 1 inch of irrigation water per week. I'd say 1.5 inches. We're close enough, but only when needed. So when we get into the fall time of the year, as we are now, only irrigate that lawn when needed, right?
Correct.
I don't think the lawn needed the 18 inches of rain that Florence just dumped on your lawn. Sorry. It probably only needed 1 or 1.5 inches, so thereby excessively wet leaves and soil moisture. Avoid spreading the disease to other areas. Remove clippings if the weather is warm and moist to prevent spread to other areas during mowing. Great thoughts. Provide good drainage for both surface and subsurface areas. So sometimes French drains, a little bit of drain tile, a little bit of clean gravel, covered with fabric, landscape fabric, or wrapped in a sock. They make those things now. That can help with the subsurface drainage. Do not mow fescue lawns shorter than 2.5 inches high nor higher than 3.5 inches. This is brown patch in the summer. When we get to Rhizoctonia, mow centipede at 1.5 inches high. What they're saying here, folks, is we don't want to let the lawn get excessively high in the mowing height, because we don't want to stress it by keeping it excessively low, but we don't want it excessively high because that's going to prolong the leaf wetness. Yep. Correct?
Correct.
Here's a good one. Have the soil tested and apply lime accordingly to test recommendations. Disease may be more severe if the soil pH is less than 6.0. There's something new. Soil test. Oh, man, they're so expensive at Carolina Fresh. Just, they're absurd. I mean, they're just, you know, expensive. They're free.
It's $150.
Yeah, they're free, right?
Yes.
They are free. Going into fall, going into winter is actually a good time to test your soil pH sometime in the winter months. So there you have it. So a lot of information, Scott, on large patch. A lot of good information. I hope the listeners have enjoyed it.
I like that on that pH. I never knew that.
That's a little new to me. So hopefully the dissertation I just gave you about large patch, first half of the show, first half of the second half of the show, was a little more intriguing and a little more lively than what we always threaten, which is
nitrogen.
The forms of nitrogen available to your lawn and their effects within the lawn. So I got to quit saying that, because you know what's going to happen.
You're going to have to wind up doing that one day.
Somebody's going to want me to do that one day, and then I'll have to go back and try to relearn a lot of what I have probably forgotten over the years. Right? Because I told you I can't remember much anymore.
It's age.
So I just tossed those papers aside. But hey, folks, don't do what I did. Don't throw it in the garbage. Don't forget about large patch within your warm season lawn. That is something so easy that I really think is easy to mitigate, to try to prevent with some fungicide applications. So why not do it? Correct?
Correct.
Spend a lot of time, a lot of effort making your landscape look good. So let's protect it. Let's take care of it. So, Scott, I think we need to move on a little bit. What you got in mind? What else we need to talk about?
What else you have over there?
Well, there's another thing. Let's switch just quickly to our cool season listeners.
Okay.
For just a couple of minutes. Overseeding time of the year, reseeding time of the year, whatever you want to call it. Maybe you have bare dirt and you want to put a fescue lawn in, right? So grass seed actually arrived today. Carolina Blue 2 is kind of our preferred thing once again this year. Some great varieties in that. Very good, clean seed. And it is available as we speak. So grass seed is available. That time is coming. For those of you who tried to seed before the rain event, I hope it didn't all float away. But if it did, I'll remind you, we have plenty of grass seed. Be happy to sell you another bag.
And real quick,
yeah.
Since we're doing this pre-recorded Friday night for Saturday, we are closed.
Great point.
Today.
Yes, we are closed Saturday because uncertain of the weather, knew that it was going to be too wet to harvest sod and have it available for customers, yada, yada, yada. So felt it might be best just to
And call Monday the store before you head up there.
That's correct. Just in case. See what time we open.
Yeah.
Because a lot of that hinges, and a lot of people don't understand, it's not always about the weather that day. When you harvest sod, you get too much rain, you can't harvest.
Yeah, and you know, and that's all harvested in the Midlands.
That's right.
Where they're calling for 13 plus.
Exactly. So, you know, with reseeding, you know, we've been through this several times leading up to this. Now's the time. We can talk more about it again next week. I'm sure we will, but it's pretty simple. Good quality grass seed with good germination rates that is 0% noxious weed free. Don't get hung up on the inert ingredients. Don't get hung up if it does have maybe 0.01% weed seeds. You're looking for what they call noxious weeds. Those are the things that are more perennial in nature that once you get them in your lawn will be a headache. So you're looking for 0% noxious weed seeds. You're looking for really good high germination rates, and you're looking for varieties that are proven. Old school varieties. The Carolina Blue 2, what I like about it, it's an 80-20 blend, 80% fescue by two varieties, 20% Kentucky bluegrass by two varieties. But what's interesting, if I put the seeds out, because that's all by weight, if I threw the seeds out on a piece of white notebook paper and I counted 100 seeds randomly out of a bag of 80-20, you know what I'd have? 50 to 55 fescue seeds out of 100.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd probably have, what would that be, 50 to 45 bluegrass seeds. Because the bluegrass seed is smaller, it's lighter, the whole nine yards. So even though it's only 20%, there's more in there than you think. What I like about bluegrass, it gives you some warm season attributes to your cool season lawn. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to survive the heat of the summer better, but what it means is coming out of summer stress in September, you throw a little fertilizer to it, you're probably going to need less seed the next year to reseed. You're going to see quicker green up in the fall.
It is pretty cool to watch.
And it holds better color in the winter. We get better color retention through January, February. So don't forget, you're reseeding that lawn. Not only do you need a bag of grass seed, you need a bag of starter fertilizer, 16, 25, 12. We've got to have that high phosphorus for plant vigor, seed vigor, the whole nine yards to get everything growing well. So if you have more questions about actually how, the process of how to do it, it's pretty simple. Visit www.carolinafreshfarms.com. There you'll find the office number for Scott, his email, Ryan, Duncan, David, and Rock Hill. Reach out to those stores. They will be happy to give you more in-depth information, correct?
Correct.
Because I want to move on, Scott. It's that changing time of year where things are beginning to change, right? Here's the other thing that's determined by soil temperatures. In spring of the year, we talk about soil temperatures. We have to be, what, 55, 60 degrees sustained 4 or 5 days before we see crabgrass seed germinate, right?
Correct.
So that's how we time pre-emergent. If you have a warm season lawn, now if you have a cool season lawn, just ignore me for a minute. I know it's hard to do, right? You're just hanging on looking for that next really great piece of advice. But you don't want to mess with pre-emergent at this point in the year if you have a cool season lawn and you're reseeding, okay? So for those that have warm season, we also need to think about pre-emergence. There's a lot going on. We got large patch prevention. Now we need to talk about pre-emergence, annual bluegrass. Once that soil temperature drops to 70 degrees or below for 3 to 4 to 5 days in a row, guess what happens? Bluegrass seed begins to germinate. Guess what else germinates? Henbit. That's that little fun purple weed, you know, in the spring of the year. The one I like.
Oh, let me get – it's in the mint family.
How do you know?
I think I've just heard that yesterday this morning.
How can you distinguish? You can roll it.
And it's a square stem.
It's a square stem. If you roll it between your thumb and your index finger, it's a square stem.
15 years I've heard that.
It is mesmerizing, is it not?
It is.
So to control that annual bluegrass, Poa annua, whatever you may call it, prodiamine works really, really well. The 007 prodiamine, because we said earlier with large patch, we don't want extra nitrogen this time of the year. It's too late. So the 007 is not inert. It has 7% potassium, which your lawn could benefit from. We need to get that pre-emergent out, and we need to think about it now because the soil temperatures across the state of South Carolina are somewhere in that mid-70s range. So here in the next few weeks, I know it's going to be warm this coming week, but here in the next few weeks, Scott, that's soil temperatures are going to continue to drop, and we need to get this out and need to have it out before we hit 68, 69, or 70 degrees. need to get the pre-emergent out. So we need to start thinking about it. It's mid-September. It's time for pre-emergent and warm season lawns. So please don't forget that. Man, there's a lot to do if you got a warm season lawn. I thought they said this Bermuda grass was easy, man. And I heard in the summer you got to mow it like three times a week. Tell me all about it. You got it.
I'm ready to move.
Yeah. See, that's the really.
And it's crazy because my wife, that's what the grass she wants. But that's funny. That's the grass she wants. But she's not out the one out there cutting the grass. It's me.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know, man. It's getting to the point that, I don't know. AstroTurf, I'm not real sure.
Concrete.
There's a good one.
I'm thinking five more years.
River rock from North Carolina. Small river rock. Tennessee, North Carolina river rock, man. Hold on.
A Vegas lawn.
Vegas lawn, that's it, man.
I was still blown away by the time we went out there where all of us were like, what's this green grass? And out of the blue, Mills was like, bluegrass?
It's so arid, man. You know, they don't have the disease pressures that we have.
Humidity, and yeah.
It's not that the grass is intolerant sometimes of heat. There are varieties of bluegrass. There are varieties of fescue that will tolerate the heat.
And it's hot out there.
The problem you run into is the humidity brings about disease and insects, two things. You notice that? The times we've been out to Vegas, I've never been bit by a mosquito.
Nothing could live in that heat besides bluegrass.
And lizards. Remember that time we went hiking? Red Rock Canyon?
Oh, yeah. Let's go hike the Mojave Desert.
Well, we did it twice. Red Rock Canyon one time.
I loved it. It was
fun. We actually had a good time.
We did.
Other than, I don't know, it was a little weird going to Red Rock Canyon. Stop at a convenience store and he says, hey, I know this great place you can go. And you start driving down this dirt road, sandy road, and you feel like you're on an episode of CSI. I don't know. Just a little strange.
Well, I'm glad there was four of us there. So
that is true. And we had bottled water, which was great.
We did.
So, Scott, the last thing I think we probably need to wrap up with is army worms, which will be interesting to see. Kind of what happens. You know, I read some interesting things about army worms this week because they have been a nuisance now for a month, an absolute nuisance. Now, we know bifenthrin, things along that lines, do a pretty good job of eradicating them. The problem is you don't really realize you have them until you go to bed one night, everything looks great. Next morning you get up and you got brown spots. All. I mean, I'm not talking just brown spots. I'm talking stem tissue, no leaves left. Look at your grass, folks.
It's like a deer when they're native.
Yeah. Looks like somebody just ate it to a nub, and it's large areas. It'll be interesting to see what happens to this army worm cycle. I don't know if this heavy amount of rain will really have a huge effect, but we'll have to see. But I will tell you what's interesting. I read an article this week. Apparently, army worms are not only a problem here in the United States. They're now beginning to affect crops in Africa in a big way. And to the point where they're eating a lot of their grain down, and they're trying to figure out how do we educate farmers down here so they know better how to diagnose it and how to prevent them, which it really is no prevention. So be on the lookout for army worms that are out there. Folks, we appreciate you tuning in this weekend to the Yard Pro Show as usual. Once again, I've said it a lot today. I want to say it again. You can find us during the week at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. Scott, did you have a good time?
I did.
It's a great time.
It was.
We wish you all the best. We hope everybody fares well after Hurricane Florence, and we'll talk to you next week.